Market View on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and today we're taking stock of losses seen across regional markets and the U.S. And just days after the S&P 500 returned to record high, sentiment seems to have been challenged due to mounting uncertainty. Today on Money FM 89.3, we're joined by Mr. Paras Anand, the Chief Investment Officer for the Asia-Pacific region at Fidelity International, to take stock and talk about the state of the markets heading into the latter third of the year. Mr. Anand, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are in good health, and welcome to the show, sir. So, Paras, you know, economic uncertainties and pandemic problems are persisting, but markets haven't really fallen off a cliff, notwithstanding yesterday's pullback, at least, on Wall Street. We've even seen the S&P 500 retest its recent all-time highs. Has the worst possibly been priced in, as fragile as things still seem to be, or do you think that the recent losses are a stark reminder that there's still a lot of uncertainty that could topple this rally with just a gentle nudge?
Yes, it's a really interesting question, JP. I think the first point to help listeners is to try and put some of that recent market strength into perspective, especially when we look at the U.S. Because there's a temptation always to kind of look at the headline index return or the average, but it's important for investors and listeners to understand that actually around that average there's been huge dispersion. So we've seen very strong performance out of certain sectors like technology and pharma, but other sectors, you know, where clearly the economic and demand impact of the coronavirus has been much more acute, have actually performed quite poorly. I think the second thing to really recognize is that, you know, what we're seeing in markets, and I think in asset markets more broadly, is partly a consequence of the substantial liquidity injection that we've seen from central banks. And that in and of itself has sort of driven up asset markets. And so one of the things that we are asking ourselves as fundamental long-term investors is what we're seeing at the moment really a reflection on what we're seeing on Wall Street? Is it really a reflection of what is happening on Main Street? And I think especially when we look at the, you know, markets like the U.S., we would say that they have probably overshot in the early part of this year. So I think it would be reasonable for people to expect quite modest returns, especially from markets like U.S. equities over the second half of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because this has really been the theme of the last couple of months, right? It's not just monetary stimulus from the central banks, but also fiscal stimulus. The image I have for us is that we're pumping out all of this liquidity and adding more water to the moat to make sure all boats can stay afloat. However, generous stimulus measures aside, though, could this just be delaying the inevitable since the global economy and various industries have undergone significant restructuring, perhaps a change into this permanent new normal? And could this actually lead to possible credit risks that will be the next thing that could endanger, at least, or hamper markets in the next, say, 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, look, I think you're hitting on a really important point here, JP, which is the difference between liquidity and solvency. And I think that there are a couple of, you know, there are a couple of parts to sort of bring out of your question. The first is that I think it's absolutely the case that, you know, we need to be focused on sort of credit risk and the extent to which we can actually see individual companies, individual industries across different parts of the world creating what we call sort of self-sustained growth. So that's growth or returns that are independent or not entirely dependent on the kind of monetary or fiscal stimulus that we've seen. And I think it's still quite early to be working that out because as we come on to this second major point is that I think that we are going to be an environment of greater differentiation. So especially as economies transition their economic strategy from monetary policy to fiscal policy, you'll find that the way that fiscal policy is used will be very different. And that the way that different economies will respond, given where they are in different parts of the world, will play a significant role in us trying to understand what is going to be that level of sustainable earning? How will the solvency and balance sheet positions be, you know, play out over the medium term? So this is the time really where I think people need to move from general observations and to start getting much more specific around different markets, different industries, and maybe even different individual companies as you start to sort of work through some some of these issues.
We're still speaking to Mr. Paris Anand. He's the CIO for the Asia-Pacific region at Fidelity International here on Money FM 89.3. We've seen markets generally take off, some of them like in the U.S., and because of this liquidity, they've all been able to surmount and wipe out those massive losses we saw in the first quarter. In comparison, though, we have seen Singaporean markets recover also, but we seem to be a bit range-bound and stuck at the moment. As compared to some of the exuberance we're seeing in other markets, seems that Singapore might be taking a more cautious approach. Why has sentiment been seen as relatively subdued, if that's an apt description of how Singaporean markets have played out vis-a-vis others?
So I think, JP, the answer to the question, I think, partly lies in the composition of the market in Singapore. So when I talked earlier about this broad dispersion of returns within markets generally, you've seen some of those stronger sectors that have driven these great returns from, let's say, the U.S. market have been largely in the technology and pharmaceutical space. Now, when we look at the composition of the market in Singapore, you know, there's a greater representation of REITs, of banks. We have less in terms of technology and pharma names in there. So that actually, I think, plays one component. The second thing is, obviously, that when you look at Singapore as a very service-heavy sector, a very service-heavy economy, and clearly we've seen, you know, quite a substantive impact on the sort of circuit breaker and the period of which we've been managing the pandemic here in Singapore. But I think as we look forward, actually, Asia in general and Singapore specifically, I think that there's a case to be far more optimistic about the outlook for returns as we kind of move into the second half of the year, which then, as I talked about earlier, starts to distinct the journey that Singapore's economy, Singapore's markets will play vis-a-vis what happens elsewhere in the world.
Now, you know, Singapore's market also very much tied to the economic prospects. And like most of the world, Singapore is going through one of its deepest recessions in recent memory. As we know, the economy here is very, very open and dependent on external factors. Will this lead to perhaps a lingering uncertainty that might weigh on Singapore's economy and ultimately the markets as well? Or do you think that there's actually a case that Singapore might come out of this a little bit more intact?
Yes, you know, JP, I'm particularly optimistic on the outlook for the Asian region and for Singapore in particular. Let me sort of explain a little bit why.
Sure.
I think that, you know, as we sort of consider the kind of things that will shape demand, and the first thing is obviously looking at how successfully the sort of the pandemic has been managed. That will start to give you a sense of the shape and sustainability of economic recovery in demand. I also think that what we've already seen is the level of economic activity recovery across the region, whether we look at mainland China, whether we look at Korea, whether we look at Taiwan, even what we're seeing today in India, we are seeing a region that is recovering both economically and in activity terms much more than we're seeing in other parts of the world. And as you rightly say, with Singapore being such an open economy and with very strong underlying fundamentals, I see this as kind of we have a much greater chance of a genuine sort of V-shaped recovery in the region and in the market. And I think that is what will also help support the market returns in Singapore as we look to the second half.
So let's talk about Fidelity's outlook and strategy heading into the last 4 months of the year, Paras. Are you taking a more cautious or more cavalier approach moving forward? And can you share with us just briefly how your allocations might be reflecting this across, say, asset classes, sectors, or geographies, however you prefer to slice up the cake?
Yes. Again, I would say that if you start at the bigger picture level, I would say that we're generally more cautious given the returns that we've seen so far earlier in the year. But we do see pockets of real opportunity. So when we look at the Asia as a region, both on the equity side and on the credit side, we see good prospects for the medium-term returns in those areas. Partly, that's also going to be helped by our medium-term bearish view on the US dollar. I think falling US dollar tends to be generally quite good for Asian and emerging market returns in general. I think when it comes to the US at the moment, we're slightly more cautious on the equity market, as I've expressed, but do see sort of value, for example, in the sort of investment grade area within sort of bonds. So, you know, as we look across the globe, yes, we would expect investors would be wise to consider a sort of a period of more lackluster returns, consolidating market, potentially even retrenchment in certain areas. But especially as we look more towards this region, I think short and medium-term outlook for returns from asset markets remains robust.
And finally, Perez, I do have to ask you about the recent rally in the U.S., which some say might be skewed and driven mostly by those tech stocks. It doesn't seem to be stopping most of them. Apple already at about $2 trillion valuation. Elon Musk, because of Tesla's rally, now the fourth richest man in the world. Just a couple of these examples of how bulletproof they seem. Do you think that the good times will keep on rolling, or will these high valuations and perhaps all this potential frothiness, as some skeptics might point out, do you think this could cause a snapback that might influence markets in a dramatic fashion?
I think it's a very important question. I think what I would say is that one of the things that's clearly been an issue for certain investors, especially, let's say, sort of fundamental-based investors, is that valuation has almost been a poor predictor of future returns. And what I mean by that is that, you know, stocks that have been expensive become more expensive. Stocks that are cheap have become cheaper. So a value-based discipline when it comes to investing has not sort of paid back that significantly for you. However, when we think about exactly as we've been talking about the transition in markets from being driven by liquidity to being more shaped by fundamentals and solvency and real demand, that's when you're going to start to see valuation become much more important as a factor in terms of what is going to be driving share prices. Certainly when we look at some of these, let's say, large technology businesses, they are today's incumbents, right? It's very difficult for us to see that they will continue to operate in a way that is totally disassociated from the economy. So in that sort of context, I would expect and I would advise people to be thinking about sort of valuation when they consider looking at some of these areas of the market that are very much in favor at the moment.
Any particular valuation metrics that you think might actually be more apt if we are going to have to start focusing on valuation more over?
So coming back to our point, JP, on, you know, understanding sort of solvency and sustainability, I think that you can't just look at the profit and loss statement. You can't just look at net income. I think you also have to look at the structure of balance sheets and look at cash, you know, free cash flow generation as well. So I think having a cash-based returns and awareness of balance sheet strength is important. So again, just to sort of take it back to the Singapore for a second, you know, despite everything that we have seen in terms of the economy, despite everything that we've seen in terms of lackluster returns from the market, it's important to us, or it's interesting to us, that we see, for example, banks starting to look at sort of share repurchases and different ways of returning value to shareholders. That gives us a sign of the fundamental underlying strength of the businesses. So this is kind of where I would, you know, rather than relying on thematic narratives or price to sales, just that also attention on cash flows and balance sheets.
I'd like to thank Mr. Perez Anand, who's the CIO for the Asia Pacific region at Fidelity International, for joining us today on Money FM 89.3. As always, I wish you and your loved ones good health and safety during these times and a pleasant rest of the week ahead.
Thank you, JP, and to you too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.